Ideas matter. Ideas matter. This is Dialogue.
Hello and welcome to Dialogue. The UN Security Council this week adopted a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip during Ramadan and the immediate release of all hostages. This is the first time for the Council to adopt such a resolution, calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip since the Hamas October 7th attack last year. But the U.S., which abstained, has already called the resolution as unbinding, a move that is undermining the resolution as well as the U.N. So will the resolution have any impact on stopping the violence? What will happen if Israel refuses to comply with the resolution? Will the U.S. continue to supply weapons to Israel in its offensives on Gaza? Joining me today are Rick Dunham, visiting scholar at Tsinghua University, Wang Jian, associate professor at Northwest University of China, and later by Dr. Gao Luft, co-director at the Institute for the Analysis of Global Security. First, Wang Jian, I will start with you. You know, the resolution calls for immediate ceasefire and also unconditional release of all hostages, as well as the need to expand the aid flow in Gaza. I want your response to this resolution. You know, this is basically the will of the UN Security Council, except for the one abstention by the U.S. All the members of the UN Security Council voted yes. My guess is like it's hugely important.
Sure, Jindo. It's a very important resolution because this is the very first time that the United Nations Security Council passed the resolution calling for immediate ceasefire after this round of war erupted last October. And also, it is a very victory of the Arab states because it is a state. This is a resolution put forward by the Arab states and also the supported by the Arab world show their unity and show their strong senses calling for peace. And we have to know that the resolution passed by United Nations Security Council represent, on the one hand, a very, very shared ideas or the shared consensus of the member states, because this is what we, if we look at the result, 14 states they support and then only United States abstained. It suggested that the international community hopes the war to come to end as early as possible and hope that humanitarian assistance could arrive into the Gaza Strip as early as possible, and also the detainees of both sides could be exchanged successfully as early as possible. That is why it, on the one hand, represents the international community's willingness. It is very important. I think it is very important consensus. And on the other hand, I think it also represents the very legal. It represents the very legal status of international society, especially from United Nations Security Council, because the resolution from United Nations Security Council always represents itself as the very legal standards and the very legal status for its members, United Nations members. So in the future, maybe. Within the recent future, or maybe years later, that this resolution could become the new milestone or the new foundation for the peace process between Israel and the Palestinians, and also would help facilitate the peace process and come back as early as possible. So that is why I call it the victory, although there were some difficulty to implement it, but it is still the diplomatic victory for the United Nations Security Council and the international community.
So with extra importance for long-term that's the solution for this problem in Gaza or between Palestinians and the Israelis. So, Rick, I also want your opinion to this. Do you also agree this is an important consensus, you know, of the UN Security Council members, I would say largely the international community? We need an immediate ceasefire and, of course, the release of hostages and then the free flow of aid in Gaza.
I agree completely. I think this is extremely significant. This is the first time that you've gotten a resolution like this through the Security Council and through what I consider petty international politics that's being played by the United States and Russia and China over technical language that has resulted in vetoes back and forth of resolutions by the United States and by Russia and China. And we're finally there. We finally have a resolution that has the standing of international law calling for a ceasefire. whether there is the United States has the power to implement it really doesn't matter at this point. The United Nations has spoken, and the United States, which has been the strongest supporter of Israel, has allowed this to happen. At the same time, the President of the United States has stated that he wants Israel to agree to a ceasefire. So I think that this is significant. The pressure is on, and let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So Gao, obviously this also represents, at least on the surface, this is the change of attitudes of the U.S. Because previously, at least for three times, the U.S. vetoed any draft resolution that called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Well, first of all, I think that the fact that 5.5 months into this war, the Security Council finally gets to pass a resolution is not a badge of honor for the international governance, international law. The fact that something of this kind has been going on for so long is without the world being able to come around some resolution, it's very disturbing idea. Now, I think that the United States, in part, wanted to send a signal to Israel, actually, which basically says, look, guys, you cannot blindly count on our support. There is a limit how much diplomatic backup we can give you. And I think a lot of this, what happened at the Security Council, is designed to send this signal to the Israelis that they should be much more considerate of U.S. interest, and the U.S. will not be able to stand up against the whole world and humiliate itself time and again by taking a position of a disruptor, of a spoiler, and so that was for the Israeli ear. But let's not forget that at the same time, at least two times that I heard, one by the spokesman of the White House and another one by the spokesman of the State Department, they also said that the resolution is not binding, which is another disturbing idea. I mean, since when Security Council resolutions are not binding? The fact that those spokesmen spoke from a stage and officially said that this is a non-binding resolution is another issue that we need to talk about, because the United States is the one that decides which council resolutions are binding and which are not. That's not the kind of international law that I'm familiar with.
So, Gao, you said that UN resolutions, or especially from the Security Council, is always binding. Is that the case?
UN Security Council resolution, in comparison to General Assembly resolutions, UN Security Council resolutions are always binding. Now, the fact that the United States is saying that it is not binding is a first. The first time I heard that after a resolution has been passed, one of the permanent members says, oh, yeah, we passed it, but it's not binding, which sort of gives the Israelis a mixed signal here. On one hand, we show you we can allow a council resolution to pass, but we're also telling you, well, it's not really binding. And it's only until the end of Ramadan, so don't worry about it. But that's what I hear that is happening here.
Mm-hmm. Wang Jian, your input here. So now the U.S. says it is not binding. It will have no impact at all. So people would ask such a practice by the United States, as Dr. Lafter says, this is the first time you hear from a UN Security Council permanent member saying that UN Security Council resolution is not binding. I mean, how big a deal is that?
I think it reflects the United States' own dilemma in its diplomatic policies or diplomatic strategies towards the Middle East. Because from the United States' perspective, that their presidential election is coming, and Joe Biden and has to get prepared for that. And against this backdrop, it is highly necessary for him to win the votes from the American Arabs at home, So given the fact that the war is still going on, that would very negatively influence Joe Biden's and his party's popularities at home. So that is why I think he has to reconsider the policy to make some transformations. And also inside the Middle East, that the war, the prolonged war in the Gaza Strip, which lead to the very disastrous status for the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip, actually lead to the hatred, or at least to the dissatisfaction of the Arab states, especially some Middle Eastern allies, such as Saudi Arabia, such as Jordan, such as Egypt, such as Qatar. And so these states, they also get a lot of pressure to the United States to change their policies. So that is why United States cannot stop the passing of the resolution and the calling for peace, which is calling for peace, which is calling for the more humanitarian assistance. But on the other hand, that United States know that they cannot force Israel to stop the war, and they don't want to totally or completely violate the relations with Israel through just cutting the military assistance or just through this diplomatic maneuver in the United Nations Security Council. So that is why United States, they put themselves into the very, very status of dilemma. And that is why, they, on the one hand, they just attend, and on the other hand, they just say, okay, this is not binding, and so you don't need to care about it. Mm-hmm. But so that is why I say United States actually themselves now in this diplomatic dilemma in the Middle East.
Rick, following what Wang Jing has said here, basically, if the U.S. says this resolution is not binding, it has no impact on the ground, people would say that would make the U.N. effort in the Security Council basically pointless because it's of no big deal at all on the ground.
You're correct. You're correct. Wang Jing is correct. It's very important to push back on what is really a semantic argument by the Biden spokespeople and the State Department. UN resolutions are binding. When the United Nations told Russia to withdraw its invading forces from Ukraine, that's binding. I mean, it's not a suggestion. It's binding, and it's not enforceable. I mean, the United Nations is not saying, well, we are going to send troops in if you do not follow our action. But I think it's a semantic argument to say that it is not binding. And I think that we all do need to push back, because otherwise the United Nations becomes a debate club and not a true international organization.
Get a balanced analysis on both domestic and international topics within the framework of cross-cultural comparisons. This is Dialogue.
So Gao, again, continuing on this theme, by making such a resolution, binding resolution, unbinding, people would say the U.S. is actually undermining the resolution itself, as well as the institution, the most important institution, the UN, of the existing international order, which was created with the leadership of the US at the end of the Second World War.
Well, that's correct. We have the so-called rules-based international order, and then we have international law. And I think that what we see here is the two concepts conflicting with each other. But let me put aside the whole issue of the resolution, because in the end of the day, what will determine whether this resolution is implemented or not is not what's happening in New York, but what's happening in Doha, in the ceasefire negotiations between the Israelis and Hamas, which, by the way, yesterday sort of blew up, and the Israelis pulled back the negotiators because Hamas did not accept any of the terms. So in the end of the day, this, and let's not forget that Hamas is not really a member of the UN. It's not really a party to all of this.
But Israel is a member of the UN.
Indeed, but Israel has its own claims and its own dialogue going on via Egypt and Qatar and the United States with representatives of Hamas, and those two parties cannot reach an agreement there, because the fundamental disagreement is about the permanent cessation of the war. And Hamas is saying, we are not willing to enter a prisoners exchange deal unless the war ends, and ends permanently, not as a 40-day or 60-day ceasefire, but end of hostilities. And as long as the two sides cannot agree on that, it doesn't really matter to them what the Security Council says, because there are also Security Council resolutions 242 and 388, and another Security Council resolution regarding Lebanon, which 1701, which calls for the withdrawal of Hezbollah north of the Litani River. So there are a lot of Security Council resolutions that have never been implemented to begin with. So Israel says, well, you know, all of these things that the UN has said have not been implemented, and we have immediate security concerns that we have to address here. We have 134 people that are still in captivity. We have to return them home. So all of this for them is, quite frankly, background noise.
Mm-hmm. But still, I think, you know, people would say, yes, Israel, of course, they have the freedom to choose to ignore the UN resolution, which is binding. I mean, Israel is expected to follow, because implementation issue is very difficult to implement. Let's acknowledge that. But it's very different from the, you know, what happened in the UN Security Council. A permanent member, in this case, the U.S., basically is saying that UN resolution here is not binding. A binding one is not binding. That's probably something unprecedented, you know, like a milestone in a bad sense. We don't know, you know, long term what kind of impact that will have, because this is, as you said, you know, international order. So are we supposed to follow the rules of the international order or not? I mean, U.S. is setting a bad example. Can we say at least that?
I think that in the end of the day, the U.S. is the only party of the Security Council or in the world at all that could influence the Israelis to stop the fighting. And you cannot do that as long as you continue to pour the weapons. So it's kind of a situation. One hand says stop, another hand says here is more weapons so you can continue the war. And I think, in the end of the day, what stops wars is not what the UN says. Quite frankly, the history is very clear about that. What stops a war is when one or two of the sides have no more ability to fight it out. And it's at that point, it's okay, well, let's figure out a way to stop it. But as long as, same is true for Ukraine, by the way. So as long as the two sides feel that the time is on their side and they can continue to fight the war and improve their gains, I don't think that anything that the UN will say or won't say will make a difference.
Okay. Now here, of course, the U.S., you know, the only country that will play a critical role in terms of, you know, influencing Israel. So, Rick, you know, people are now asking the question whether the U.S. will continue to supply weapons to Israel. So given this is election year, obviously, the current administration, you know, Biden, President Biden, is in a dilemma. You know, on one hand, you do have people they want to see U.S. to take a tougher attitude toward Israel, and on the other hand, you know, there are Republicans, they are, you know, strong supporters of Israel. So, what's likely to happen?
Well, I think if it comes to weapons sales, there is not going to be opposition in Congress to additional weapon sales for Israel, as we're saying, it's. I think that the United States will be talking about peace and sending weapons of war at the same time. But I think to me, I mean, the most interesting parts of the dilemma are internal politics, both in Israel, where Benjamin Netanyahu is facing all sorts of internal issues from his very far right religious parties who do not want their sons to be drafted into military service, and in the United States, where Donald Trump recently sent a message to Benjamin Netanyahu, who is not one of his good friends, to get this over with. I think there's a lot of stress in the political system in both countries, and I think Benjamin Netanyahu does not have friends in either party. At least the presidential candidates. I don't think Donald Trump likes him very much. I don't think that Joe Biden likes him very much. And so I think that you're going to have some internal political pressures in the next few months, both ways. But at the same time, I think the United States will continue to supply weaponry. So I think that you're going to have strange situations where there's going to be a political struggle, but that won't interfere with the continuation of sending weapons of war to Israel.
Mm-hmm. Jim, of course, if you look at the larger international community of countries, for example, in Europe, some of them like Spain, Ireland, Malta, and Slovenia. Slovenia have agreed, at an EU summit to recognize a Palestinian state, when the time comes to help achieve peace. Do you think, the extra pressure will be put on Israel, and Israel probably, is like getting more isolated in this sense?
I think the pressure from the Western, especially from the European countries, of course, will add new pressure to Israel, because with more and more states, especially the Western states, calling for the Palestinians' nationhood and statehood independence, it actually will force Israel to consider their own policies, especially during the past months in the Gaza Strip, and also their settlements policies in the East Jerusalem and the West Bank. So I think it might be the very positive encouragement for the Israelis, left wing and central wings and other peace lovers, to do something to facilitate the peace to arrive as early as possible. But we cannot forget that one thing is that, the pressures from the international community is really important, but actually this pressure should be transformed into the real political forces and the motivations inside Israel's own political system. Given the fact that Israel now is still under the leadership of the wartime cabinet led by Benjamin Netanyahu, and also that the right-wing political and social voices are still very strong inside Israeli society. So I don't think this just external pressures, even from the European countries, might work within the very recent future. So I think that is why the international community should do something more effective and more smartly way to influence Israeli decision makers and also this public to transform and to reconsider their policies to hope to facilitate peace to arrive as early as possible. Jinduo.
Mm-hmm. Of course, this actual pressure possibly will come only like four of the European countries. Gao, last week the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, urged the EU leaders at a summit basically not to apply double standards in their response to the conflicts in Ukraine and Gaza. What are the double standards? And you think the West, especially European countries, are they in a comfortable zone to practice such double standards? Why are they continuing with this kind of practice? Because that hurt their image, to say the least.
Double standard? I don't know what this term means.
Let me guess. People would say, civil casualties in Ukraine. That's horrendous, but somehow civilian loss, or people would call it genocide in Gaza, that's okay. And politicians, even they don't want to talk about that.
Look, don't look for justice or consistency. These things no longer exist in international politics. Unfortunately, we are in a new world in which everyone has a different standards and different rules, and it's all very self-serving.
Gao, you are a pessimist
myself,
here.
I'm not passing, I'm just observer of what's happening in the international system, and mm-hmm. there are numerous examples of kind of things that are acceptable on one side of the world and unacceptable on another side of the world, and one place is genocide, another place is not. These are all, and one side is terrorism, another side is freedom fighter. I'm not even going into this. You know, my agenda is much simpler than that. And it has nothing to do with Palestinian state or not. We have now a situation on the ground that needs to be diffused before it gets much worse, okay? And that has to do with obtaining some formula in which two sides can stop the fire, stop killing each other. And this is the urgent thing. All these talks about the day after and the day after the day after and the Palestinian statehood and two-state solution, all these things, it's not for now, okay? Now we have to, and unfortunately, we're dealing with a situation. One side is a government which has domestic constituencies and subjected to various pressures and so forth, as my colleagues described. The other side is essentially one man who is in a cave, in some tunnel underground, who is half the time is not even communicating, and nobody knows when is the next time he'll pick up the phone. And this is the guy that has the power to decide whether or not this conflict ends. There are people who are now naively think that the Israeli government could change tomorrow. So I want to break the news from Israel. Even if tomorrow the Israeli government were to collapse, it would take 6 months for a new government to be sworn in, because in Israel you only change governments by election, okay? So you have to go through a whole process of election and then building a new coalition and so forth. So for the next 6 months at least, if not more, this is the government you have to deal with. And I think that we have to lower our expectations and focus on very surgical solutions right now.
Well, on that note, we come to the end for today's show. Many thanks to our guests. You can also find us on the CGTN app on YouTube. I'm Xu Qinduo. Thanks for being with us. See you next time.